Good morning. It's Sunday morning, June 22nd, 2014. Happy solstice. You know, yesterday morning was the summer solstice in the Northern Hemisphere, the longest day. So today I think we'll just talk a little bit about the solstice, the equinoxes, the sun, the lack of sun, all the things that are related to that and how we might use them to remind us of the Dharma. I'm Wendy Shinyo-Halet, sitting in for Reverend Koyo Kobosi, who is out of town or traveling back, I think, today. And I'm happy to share this solstice time with you. I think I actually was doing a summer solstice show last year as well. So, it may be my calling to do solstice shows. So the summer, you know, I think about the summer and winter solstices and the spring and fall equinoxes as something that historically have been celebrated from, you know, mostly by nature-based pagan religions and spiritual practices. And I remember years and years ago when I first kind of put two and two together that actually our holidays seem to correspond or align with the time of the solstices, but yet the solstice and the equinoxes weren't, you know, sort of part of the celebration or the experience, the either religious, spiritual, or otherwise, but yet they were connected to that time. Like Christmas is at the winter solstice, although Christmas obviously is the Christian celebration of the birth of Jesus. Passover, the Jewish Passover and the Christian Easter, celebrated at the spring equinox time. Sort of the full circle, birth and rebirth. And then the Jewish New Year is celebrated at the autumn equinox. So, you know, I was like, I remember having like an aha moment. I mean, this was quite some years ago, but it was like, gee, you know, it's all these other holidays and religious celebrations and observances are sort of packaged at solstice time, yet nature has nothing to do with it, or the earth, or the seasons. You know, they still continue with like midsummer or summer solstice celebrations, like in Stonehenge, of course, everyone knows about that. And also in Northern Europe, I guess, and in Native Americans in the Great Plains, they participated in, you know, the bonfires and the dancing and the feast, that all the things that are related to with, you know, typical summer solstice celebrations, which, you know, in our culture, we think of summer solstice as being the first day of summer when, in fact, it's sort of the midsummer celebration. But at the same time, this is the one solstice here that we don't have a holiday celebrating it. You know, we have Christmas and Easter, but no holiday connected to the summer solstice in our culture. So I was thinking about this yesterday, and I thought, well, you know, what about our own midsummer traditions, like barbecues and summer fire pits? You know, isn't that sort of what the dancing around the solstice fires is? I think so. I think we've kept on without even knowing it. You know, no matter how far, it seems that, like, we keep getting farther and farther from being an earth-based or a nature-based culture. We don't at all think of, I think it seems like our culture doesn't think of the earth and nature and the cosmic system that sort of supports us all as divine, you know, but there is a primal urge, I think. It's a sort of an instinctual part of us to celebrate the awe of, you know, nature, the awe of the things that happen in the sky, you know, in the heavens. We call that in the heavens sometimes. So there is still this sense of divinity in us, but it's buried, and I don't think it comes to our conscious attention. You know, the changes of seasons are marked by these midpoints, these solstices and equinox. Yet, unless it's too hot or too cold or rainy or dry or snowy or even the most beautiful, perfect blue sky day, we don't really notice. We rarely celebrate, like the planets, the stars, or any of these points that herald the seasonal shifts. In some Buddhist traditions, though, they do still honor the solstice period, but not in that nature-based way, but it's considered auspicious to recite prayers or sutras on solstice and equinox times, as if the merit of the recitation would be magnified hundreds and thousands of times. So yesterday, in thinking about this, you know, how do we celebrate the solstice in our culture, I thought maybe to just step away from our to-do list, step outside, put our errands away, put our schedules away, put down the smartphones and the tablets, and just remember the earth, remember the heavens, the sky, the sun, the moon, the planets. Remember for a moment what light and warmth and green and the abundance of fresh food. This is the time of, you know, roadside stands and farmers markets. What do that all means? What it means to us in our lives and how it supports us and nurtures us. I don't think a ritual or like a prayer or a chanting of sutras is necessary. You know, one of the hallmarks of the Bright Dawn Way of Oneness from the Bright Dawn Center of Oneness Buddhism is that we think of things in the way that we live right now, not honoring or holding on to past traditions and rituals if they've outlived their usefulness. You know, so maybe just forget, you know, that you have to chant. I mean, if that's your spiritual practice, that's great, but maybe just stopping to notice how good it feels to maybe light up a charcoal, take a swig of your summer beer and listen to the birds, enjoy the evening sun on your face. Just notice it. You know, personally, when I think of the winter and summer solstice, I think of Amida Buddha, the Buddha of infinite light. You know, that light and that warmth of the sun is always there, even if we don't see it. And just like Amida's wisdom and compassion is always there, even if we don't feel it sometimes. And at the winter solstice, you know, it's the shortest, darkest day. Yet it's the time to sort of sit in the shadow of Amida, but with the faith that the days will get longer and the sun will come out. But it is that very darkness that helps us reflect, be quiet, be still, rest our bodies and minds in the winter. But in the summer, at the summer solstice, especially the longest, brightest day, it's a time to celebrate that the light, in fact, did return. And it did. It's warmed the earth and it's greening the grasses. And it's time to get outside and enjoy the colors and the sounds and the smells of summer. It is a time to celebrate. It is a time to notice. You know, funny thing, I was thinking about this all day yesterday, knowing I was going to give this talk today, and I took a long walk in my neighborhood, and I neighborhood walks a lot for my exercise, and just actually it's a meditation practice, and I greeted neighbors with happy solstice, and some of the replies I received most of the replies I received ended with a question mark. First day of summer? Question, question, question. Solstice, like they weren't even sure what the word meant. And then I even got a couple of retorts that pretty familiar in the Rochester area where warmth is not always available for a long period of time. Some guy said it could be 10 degrees warmer. It was about 75, I think, at the time. So, you know, it made me laugh because it's like, yeah, we don't know this. We just don't know this. You know, Thursday evening, Reverend Koyo Kobose had a summer solstice service, and he reminded us at that time to keep a warm heart. I think that's a great way to remember and honor the solstice, not just for the light, but for the warmth and what that means if we keep a warm heart. You know, the sun keeps a warm heart for us no matter what we do, who we are, or what we say or think. Maybe we can try to be like the sun and always keep a warm heart. Well, before I go on and on about this, I'll continue on with my thought process, but let's take a pause and hear from Adrian Kabose Sensei, Reverend Koyo's wife, who recorded a Dharma glimpse for us today. Adrian?
Good morning. The title of my Dharma glimpse is Procrastination. The other day, I was weeding in the garden. I had known I should weed, but procrastinated, and so had not weeded in quite some time, and the weeds had grown a lot. For some of the bigger weeds, I had to get a big shovel and gouge them out of the ground. I was reminded of the book Little Prince. It's been a really long time since I read it, but I kind of sort of think it was about a little prince who lived on a little asteroid and spent a lot of time digging up the seedlings of a plant I don't remember the name of, that if he let grow, would become humongous and take over the asteroid. I'm sure the book was about a lot more than this, but anyway, I had let my weeds grow, and they were taking over my garden. As I continued weeding and noted how easy it was to pull the young weeds, I thought of other things that are easier to do when you don't procrastinate. For example, if you spill something on the counter and leave it alone for a while, it becomes dry and sticks to the counter and thus is much harder to wipe off than if you had just wiped it right away. If you let your car get really dirty, it takes longer to wash and also takes a lot more scrubbing. If you don't exercise regularly, it's much harder and takes much longer to get back in shape. If you have an argument with a good friend and just let it fester within you and you procrastinate about trying to make up with the friend, it'll be a lot harder to mend your relationship with him or her. You get the idea. So where's the Dharma in this? Well, if you procrastinate about applying the Dharma in your daily life, you'll lose touch with the Dharma and you'll end up just existing and not living. Apply the Dharma to your daily life, and it will help you experience a wonderful life. Palms together. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Adrian. You know, that's, I'm a procrastinator. And I read a book a long time ago about procrastination, and it said that procrastination is a typical condition that affects people who are perfectionists. And I think that hits home for me. It's like I think many times we don't do something because we're afraid we're not going to do it as well as we should, or it intimidates us because we have expectations that we should do it a certain way, and we know we either don't have the time or the energy or just don't feel confident. Her message is loud and clear, and it's exactly what I was saying before her glimpse is, you know, trying to get at putting the Dharma in your daily life wherever it appears, whether it's, you know, paying attention to the solstice or, like she said, you know, weeding. You know, life can get so, I don't know, like life. It's all around us. The Dharma's all around us, but we're so busy just, you know, dealing with life. But there it is. The Dharma's in action in our life. That's the Dharma. You know, in Buddhism, we talk of the three marks of existence, you know, the three marks of life. And the three marks are impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and non-self. Before this gets all, like, you know, philosophical or theological, this is really just talking about life. And all those things showed in my neighbor's remark about the solstice. You know, impermanence just means that everything is changing all the time. Even when we see it as the same old, same old, it's not the same old, same old. It's changing every minute. It's shifting. It's transitioning. You know, I think what I read somewhere about, you know, every cell of our body is like regenerating like every few minutes or something. I don't know, every hour. It was something like that, but we're changing. We're not aware of it. It also means that nothing really ceases to exist. I think that's something people who study Buddhism forget. Okay, it just looks that things cease to exist or die when they change from one form or state to another. But if it is a law of impermanence, if in our life, in life law or a mark of existence is impermanence, then if something ceased to exist, it would mean that there is permanence. It would actually negate that law. Because if something ceased to exist, it would be permanently non-existent. Just like a pot of water on the stove boiling dry. The water didn't cease to exist. It just changed form, became steam. And it's probably still dripping from your kitchen window. So that's impermanence. Nothing we don't deal with in every moment of every day, but it's also stuff that makes us discontent. And that leads us to the unsatisfactoriness of life. You know, unsatisfactoriness is the suffering that the word dukkha is frequently translated as. And I think this suffering business, you know, from the word dukkha gives Buddhism a bad name, and it's sometimes referred to the bad news of Buddhism. But it's really just stating life as it is. Life is shifty. It changes. You know, it's great sometimes, and we can be really happy sometimes, and sometimes we're not so happy, and sometimes life isn't that great. But in our happiness, unhappiness, comfort, and discomfort, most of the time that's based on our physical assessment of things or our physical condition or our expectations. Yet what the Dharma teaches us, of course, is that this physical world cannot and will not bring us satisfaction all the time. It is, by its very nature, constantly changing, going, you know, changing, coming from satisfactory to unsatisfactory, satisfactory to unsatisfactory, so therefore not permanently satisfying. We want things to stay the same, and we want them to be the way we want them to be all the time, because we're continuously putting life and putting others in our life into this box of our fixed expectation, our egos. Now, the third mark of existence, or the third aspect of life that we all know, is non-self. But this non-self that I'm talking about isn't that there's a lack of you or a lack of me, but there's a lack of everything, all phenomena, in a discrete, individual, unchanging identity. You know, because everything is conditioned or changed by everything else. So, you know, when you talk of a day, it's a day that's made up of you and your spouse and your neighbors and your friends and the weather, and it's not a discrete thing. You can't call Thursday Thursday and make it stick as a one thing. Everything is interconnected and transitory. Everything is a composite of something else. I mean, if we point to a car or a table and try to explain what that is, we can't point to that carness. Equally, we can't point to what makes us the self we think we are. You know, it's like, I remember first thinking about that. It's like you can't say, okay, a car is a thing that has tires. Well, a lot of things have tires. Well, we can't call it a car. You know, we can't call it a car. You can't point to a table and say it's a thing that has a flat surface and legs. Well, a lot of things have that. Desks have that. A lot of things have that. So things are not as we think they are, and that's why we get into trouble. We think I am this discrete self, and you are this discrete self, and we position each other in those boxes. This is the recipe for not being happy and not being satisfied. We go through life acting like we are this one fixed thing, and everyone and everything else is the same one fixed thing, and it better stay that way. And, you know, so bringing this back around to the seasons and the equinoxes and the solstices, our relationship to the seasons is like that, too. We have expectations for them, and we have relationships with them based on what we are and what they were in the past. We think about the last summer and last winter. which isn't the self or the season that we are now, or life as it is now. But the seasons, the equinoxes, the solstice, are wonderful Dharma reminders that perception of the sun traveling across the horizon, everything is constantly shifting and changing, reminding us that our own personal life journeys are continually ongoing. And the summer solstice is the time for us to pause and remember that. Just like the meaning of the word solstice, you know, the meaning of the word solstice is to stand still, because the sun is going along and appears to stop, then change directions. So what a great time for us to stand still a minute and reflect on where we are at the moment, to put our busyness on pause, look around and see what we're experiencing right now. Not about what we plan, not about what we are planning or what we'd like to do, but what is happening now. And then, if we want, like the sun, change directions. The angle of the sun's light as it travels across the sky changes ever so slightly every day throughout the year. It rises a few minutes earlier and sets a few minutes later. And then it goes the other way. But this change is barely noticeable to us in our daily life. You know, in the spring equinox, our days get about 3 hours longer. And then by the summer solstice, we have arrived at our long day, about 15 hours here in New York, about 21 hours in Alaska, and never setting at the North Pole. And the winter solstice, we celebrate the return of light. Yet the days are short, and darkness is how we begin and end them. We know, despite appearances, though, that every day, minute by minute, the darkness will be replaced with more and more and more light. And all of this is Dharma, reminding us that things don't always appear the way they are. If we don't know that at the darkest point of winter, we did not know that the sun would come back, we could get a bit depressed. But every day, life presents us with circumstances that seem one way, and we may be very, very quick to conclude that they are that way, or, as Reverend Guillaume Kabose says, to put a period on everything, to conclude. But the Dharma reminds us not to conclude. You know, in the Lankavatara Sutra, it is stated, all things are unreal. There is neither defilement nor purity. Things are not as they are, as they seem, nor are they otherwise. You know, that is really important, because I think the solstices remind us of that. Here it is, the brightest, longest day, the most sun, yet it's all going to go downhill as of right now, as far as the lack of daylight. In the deepest, darkest of the winter, it's going to go the other way. You know, that is the reminder. Things are not as they seem, and our people are not as they seem. We respond to people as we have judged them, not as they are presenting to us now. So remember the solstices, and when you're about to conclude, remember that the shortest day means that each day from then on will offer us more light, and the longest day signals the start of shorter and shorter days. So like the sun, who doesn't stop, just appears to. It just keeps going. And so we need to just keep going. And remember, things are not as they seem. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us. Enjoy your day. Celebrate the sun.